This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, March the 15th, 2013. Hello and a warm welcome from to Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending March the 15th, 2013, which this week has been edited by Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. I am Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for Ros Lydiard. Now, as this is my first time presenting, we have Keith Vincent here riding shotgun, making sure I don't drive the wagon off the road. And we also have your regular posse of readers, who are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
Well, first, shall we have a look at some of the activities which might be of interest taking place in the next week or so? We have a number of concerts, three of which are on the same night, which is Saturday, March the 23rd. The first is Winchester Symphony Orchestra at New Hall, Winchester College. They're playing Dvořák Symphony No. 5 and Mussorgsky's Night on the Bear Mountain. The Ashton Singers are presenting music for Lent and Holy Week in the choir of Winchester Cathedral. And Six West are at St John's Church, New Allsford, singing Vivaldi's Gloria and Captain Gnaw and His Floating Zoo. On Sunday, March the 24th, once again at Winchester College, New Hall, Winchester Music Club are playing Haydn's Perkinmess and Mozart's Symphony No. 40. Finally, an advance notice of the next play at the Chesil Theatre, Prynne by Andrew Davis, a biting comedy about the principal of a teacher education college. Now, I mention this particularly as your usual presenter, Ros Lydiard, is taking on the role of Prynne. It will, of course, be excellent. It runs from the 6th to the 13th of April. Tickets are likely to go quickly, so if you are interested, you can book tickets on 0844 87 00087, that is 0844 87 00087. Now, lighting up times for the coming week, on Friday the 15th of March the sun rose at 6:20 a.m. and set at 6:11 p.m. On Wednesday the 20th of March, lighting up time will end on 6:09 a.m. and begins again on 6:19 p.m. Now, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with recording you have received from us, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862826. That is 01962 862826. If you'd like to skip to any particular item on the recording, you can press the forward button on the top of your Sapphire player to move to another track. We now come to the main headlines from the Hampshire Chronicle, which this week are: revamped station area would attract big business, new threats to Bushfield Camp, auction house ran up debts of nearly £40,000. So, Claire, may we hear the story behind the first headline, please?
Revamped station area would attract big business. Winchester could attract the headquarters of a national company if the area around the railway station is redeveloped, a meeting heard. Architect Paul Bulkley said the land was ripe for regeneration with potential for very big buildings. "We are talking 9 to 10 stories," he said. "That is a lot of floor space, the kind of building a major company might relocate to from London. These are the kind of heights that would be enough to generate serious interest from developers, while not doing harm to the skyline of the city. It would bring employment back out of London. People would be working somewhere they want to live, That is a more sustainable future. Speaking at a meeting last Thursday, called by the City of Winchester Trust and Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINAC, Mr. Barclay said another option was a major arts building. Where are the cultural buildings in Winchester? For the city we aim to be, I don't think we have that many. The meeting heard that the land is mainly owned by the city and county councils and Network Rail, relatively few landowners, which would make development easier. The land in question stretches from Gladstone Street to the cattle market off Worthy Lane and is mainly car parks. Mr. Barclay of Snug Projects, based in Harman House, Andover Road, in the heart of the area in question, said the car parks could be retained with buildings on top, potentially creating more space for cars, not less. Much of the land is in a valley, so building would not be overbearing. One, Cromwell House on Andover Road, is 8 stories high, he pointed out. He called on the local authorities to make sure they keep control of any development so the city ends up with what it wants and not what a developer wants. David Ash of CH Design said electrification of the railway between Southampton and the Midlands in 2018 would boost commuter traffic. There was unrealised potential for the train station to also become a bus hub. Mr. Ash said the area was full of relatively poor quality urban fabric, such as the TA Centre on Gladstone Street, and commercial buildings on Andover Road, such as Brewer's and the Hunt's store. There is no feeling of arriving in the historic capital of England. When you get to the junction, it is a sea of tarmac. The station is isolated from the city. You come from the station, go into the underpass on Sussex Street, and where are you? You know there is a city centre, but there is no clear route to get there. Craig Hedges of Hampshire County Council Property Services said he understood the landowners are talking to each other about future development. Around 50 people attended the thought-provoking meeting at the United Church. Angela Seeley, Vice Chairman of WINAC, asked, "What would we like to see in this area? What would excite us? Do we want a theatre? An opera house? Do we want more exciting public spaces or more interesting commercial space? It is a challenge of thinking differently about these spaces." David Jones said, "Let's concentrate on what is successful. Forget offices. Athenia House has been empty for 2 years. It's education, culture, and leisure." Esther Hack of nearby Stockbridge Road said, "We need to think about what people need. I would be happy to make the area a park. The idea of 9-story buildings is horrendous." Eleanor Waterhouse, a trust member, said, "We need more leisure facilities. There is nothing for young people to do in Winchester." City Councillor Chris Pines said Winchester was attractive to developers. Economically, it was doing well compared to other towns, judging by the lack of empty shops on the high street. John Hearn, City Council planner, said nothing would happen without a detailed action plan and public consultation. Mr. Barclay believes there are 3 areas of Winchester ripe for development: the railway station, Bar End, and the bottom end of Winnall. A spokesman for Network Rail said, "We are always keen to carry out improvement work at stations for the benefit of passengers, but are not involved in discussions to develop land at or near Winchester Station."
New threat to Bushfield Camp. Campaigners' last-ditch bid to protect land. Winchester civic campaigners were this week battling to save Bushfield Camp from development, as the Chronicle went to press on Wednesday. A planning inspector recently designated 20 hectares of the site as land allocated for employment, after it was initially labelled an opportunity site in the City Council's district local plan. But members of the City of Winchester Trust were pressing for a cabinet meeting to protect the land. Cabinet was debating the findings of the report, and the Trust was set to argue Bushfield Camp was too important to Winchester's natural landscape to be lost to development. A report to Cabinet is urging support for the inspector's changes. Without it, the local plan would remain unadopted. There would be years of delays, opening the district to the risk of no planning control. But speaking before the meeting, Trust member Patrick Davies said, "This change of wording makes Bushfield Camp incredibly vulnerable now. There are provisos that come with it, but employment can mean absolutely anything, and who knows what sort of employment we're talking about. We have been campaigning to save it for years because it is a vital part of the Winchester landscape. We are all for more jobs, but not there." The Trust also wants the Council to create a green belt around Winchester to link up with the South Downs National Park and preserve the countryside. Bushfield Camp was an army base until the 1970s and has previously been targeted by developers. Owned by the church commissioners, it has been linked with supermarkets, housing, and more recently, a knowledge park for high-tech firms. But Bushfield Down Supporters Group has been trying to have the site registered as a village green to prevent future development. John Leonard, who founded the group, although he is no longer a member, said if development was unavoidable, it should be at the camp rather than nearby downland. He said, "If development becomes inevitable, then I would support it at the camp area. But I would also demand, as much as one can, that it was of the right quality and did not become an eyesore, given its position near the wild downland." Mr. Davies added, "The Trust could not mount a legal challenge against the inspector's decision." He said, "It's fair to say there is no way we have the resources to contemplate any judicial review. The timing is very tight, and we would have to put up significant sums of money, so there's no realistic prospect." The local plan was approved by the inspector following the inquiry last autumn. It is a blueprint for 11,000 new dwellings across several sites over the next 20 years, including 4,000 in Winchester. But detailed plans for the number of houses at each site are still to be approved by another inquiry to follow later this year.
Auction House ran up debts of nearly £40,000. An Alsford auction house has collapsed, owing £39,700 to 300 people, the Hampshire Chronicle can reveal. The full extent of Prospect Auction Room's liabilities is outlined in a legal document seen by this newspaper. They relate to the bankruptcy of Gemma Sharp, said to be the auctioneer in charge of the business, based in the town until it closed last autumn. The Chronicle has previously reported how hundreds of people were owed money, including from cherished heirlooms. Scores of people attended the business to try to get their money or retrieve unsold goods. Anger has mounted after Charles Evans, who claims to have been manager of Prospect, won planning permission to convert the furniture warehouse in Eastern Lane, Winchester, into another auction house. Mr. Evans said he never owned Prospect, although his application to the City Council shows he did view it as his business. The official receiver report into Miss Sharp said, She traded as an auctioneer between November 2009 and October 2012 with another. She left the business full-time in September 2010 due to childcare issues, and the auction room was run by her business partner and an employee. As a consequence of Sharp's absence, management of the business became far less structured and its affairs became untidy. The cause of insolvency can be attributed to poor business management, a loss of customers, and finally, an inability to trade when Sharp reached her overdraft limit. The majority of her debt is to unpaid customers, which accrued between June and October 2012. In a statement of affairs lodged at the county court, Miss Sharp said difficulties started in March 2012. Stock was not coming into the sale room. Our outgoings therefore overtook our incomings. Buyers also stopped coming. Sales were not covering costs. But whether the extent of the debt is accurate is unclear. Susanna Lyle has claimed she is owed some £20,000, but the creditors' list says it is only £7,884. She said, "Well, that's on the low side. I had Waterford Glass that was insured for £14,000. The Chronicle has inspected documents at Winchester County Court which show total debts of £80,130, comprising £31,350 to banks, £3,021 to local authorities, £5,500 public utilities, £519 miscellaneous, and further debts of £39,739, mainly to customers. The report by the official receiver said Sharp, 34, of Station Road, Alsford, has no assets apart from a W. Reg Land Rover Freelander valued at £500. There is no chance of creditors getting their money back. No creditors' meeting will be held, the report said. Miss Sharp was unavailable for comment. A spokesman for the official receiver said it was open to any information about assets.
Thank you, Jerry. Well, after those headline stories, we will continue first with the death notices, plus an obituary, followed by Claire's reading of Christian comment. We'll then have letters to the editor, historical items, Your Say, Chronicle comment, First Person, Belgarum, and Westminster Diary. First, the death notices. Arwell, Yvonne Bertha May Arwell, peacefully in hospital, 6th of March, aged 94.
Bishop, Donald Bishop, at home, 9th of March, aged 79.
Came, David W. Came, suddenly at home in Devizes, 6th of February, aged 82.
Chaplain, Ralph Chaplain, peacefully, 10th of March, aged 93.
Coleman Rawthorne, Veronica Coleman Rawthorne, formerly of Crawley, peacefully, 8th of March, aged 99.
Emery, Ruth Emery, née Holmes, in hospital on 3rd of March, aged 80.
Groves, Maud Groves, peacefully, 7th of March, aged 100.
Harder, Brian George Harder, peacefully at home.
Kilgreen, that is Neil Kilgreen, 4th of March, aged 80.
Lidbury, Susan Clarissa Lidbury, née Scott, suddenly on 6th of March.
Lowe, George James Lowe, peacefully in hospital, 4th of March, aged 91.
Pitt, William Robin Pitt, peacefully at home, 9th of March, aged 86.
Ryder, Joe Ryder, in hospital, 2nd of March, aged 90.
Small, Peter Barnes Small, peacefully, 6th of March, aged 89.
Sweeney, Donald Sweeney, peacefully, 8th of March, aged 99.
Trasler, Beryl Joan Trasler, at home, 6th of March.
We now have an obituary for Patricia Hughes, a Radio 3 stalwart famed for her warm authority and meticulous delivery. Patricia Hughes, who has died in Winchester aged 90, was one of the great personalities of BBC Radio. Her cut-glass diction and warm authority were a feature of Radio 3 for 30 years. Renowned for her meticulous delivery, she was also one of the first women newsreaders on BBC Radio. "Reading the news," she said in the 1980s, "isn't something that is absolutely necessary for men to do. You don't have to have a deep voice to sound authoritative." Born in 1923, on leaving school she travelled to the Far East to rejoin her parents in Kuala Lumpur on the outbreak of war. Just before Christmas 1941, the Japanese invaded, and Patricia and her mother fled to Singapore and escaped aboard one of the last refugee ships. Patricia returned to England and worked as a secretary at the BBC. She was persuaded to apply for a job as an announcer for the Overseas Service. As she later recalled, "I did an appalling voice test. It was full of German names and I knew no German, but I spluttered away. I could hear them giggling at me, but I got the job. When I asked why, they said, 'You were the only one who kept going.'" She transferred to the Home Service, then the Light Programme, and finally to the Third Programme when it was created in 1946. In 1962, Patricia took a career break to bring up her daughter, Emma, returning in 1969. On her return, she was asked to present a new series of Monday lunchtime live concerts. Her voice was not to everybody's taste, but there was a barrage of criticism when she had to retire in 1983 at the BBC's compulsory retirement age of 60. Rewarded with a special commendation at the first Sony Awards in 1983, it wasn't long before she took on freelance projects, frequently appearing on the airwaves on Quote, Unquote, among others. She also voiced many talking books for the blind, including, notably, the two-volume autobiography of Margaret Thatcher. In the 1950s, Patricia married John Ginnett, a solicitor. She had many outside interests, including gardening, four-legged animals of all varieties, the piano, and needlepoint. Patricia died peacefully in a nursing home in Winchester on February the 8th. She leaves her daughter and son-in-law, Emma and Murray Weston of Hursley, and granddaughters, Polly and Laura. And now, Claire, Christian comment, please.
This is headed "Not Seeing What Is There" and is written by Terry E. Hemming. Have you been to the British Museum's exhibition "Ice Age Art: Arrival of the Modern Mind"? If you haven't, then do let me recommend it. It has art that stretches back 40,000 years, with the most modern piece being only 10,000 years old. There are carvings, ceramic pieces, sketches scratched on bone, fantastical creatures and lifelike representations. It is a wonderful collaboration between the archaeologists and the art historians, with modern artists having their work displayed alongside. Yet, as I wandered around, I was all too aware how much I needed the help of the experts. Had I stumbled on these pieces in my back garden, I simply would not have noticed them. Even well illuminated in their cases, I frequently needed the explanatory notes and sketches before I could see what was there. However, once I had been supplied with the clue, I could see and notice the most beautiful art and the genius of the human creator. We often need help to see what is there. The problem is not with the object, but with our perception of it. The psalmist prayer, "Open my eyes," is one I need frequently. He wanted to see wondrous things out of God's law, but there are many times when we need to see clearly. Paul told the people at Lystra, modern Klystra in Turkey, that they should see God in the good things of nature and of his filling them with food and joy. We all receive good things, but only some trace them to God and are grateful, and often it is not those who have the most, but those with the least that are able to do this. The Bible has a wonderful story of a prophet called Balaam, who had been given a task by a king called Balak to use his prophetic gifts to curse Balak's enemies. On the way, Balaam's donkey stopped, and he tried to make it continue by beating it. The donkey surprisingly spoke, and Balaam then could see an angel which the donkey had seen, but Balaam had not. See the book of Numbers, chapter 22. It is all about our naturally not seeing what is there. The writer of the letter to the Hebrews says that we should be generous in our hospitality, for we may well be entertaining angels without knowing it. We often do not see the godlike qualities of our fellow humans. This leads us back to the exhibition and the clues which help us to see the art which has been there for 40,000 years and yet not seen by other humans. We need help to enable us to see the presence of God in his world and in each other. And that was written by Terry E. Hemming.
Thank you, Claire. Well, we now have we have letters to the editor, starting with Robin.
The first letter is from Janice Reynolds of Full Flood, with the title, "Two Schools Will Be One Too Many." May I comment on proposals for a free school for 420 children aged 4 to 11 on the Barton Farm site, with 60 reception pupils from September 2014? If the Department for Education approves it, this school, funded by Carla Holmes, surely would negate the need for Hampshire County Council to build the 420-pupil Rotherley Primary School to form an all-through school on the residentially constrained Westgate site in Cheriton Road. This would save £10 million plus, money that could be better used to improve and extend existing schools until the school at Barton Farm is built. It is reported the free school would follow Hampshire County Council's admissions policy based on geographical catchment areas, with those living closest to the school gate having priority. This will certainly not be the case for the proposed Rotherley Primary School, with children from across the city adding yet more traffic to congested roads, particularly during the morning rush hour. Hampshire County Council should reconsider plans for a new primary school on the former Rotherley boarding house site in light of the proposal for a new free school at Barton Farm. Janice Reynolds, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this second letter is also in connection with Barton Farm and comes from Jeremy Gardner. Road diversion will resolve a conflict. As a resident of Andover Road North, I wish to voice my strong support for Carla Holmes' Barton Farm Master Plan, which includes the diversion of Andover Road and Andover Road North through the development. Andover Road North has a 50 mile per hour limit for most of its length, and it includes a dual carriageway section. But it is also a residential street, serving houses along its western frontage, which each have individual driveway access. Barton Farm can resolve this conflict. The new community must be successfully integrated, and to that end it is vital it is not only bypassed by the existing road network. The proposed diversion through this development is fundamental to this. Unlike the existing road, the new road can be a local distributor road. It will act as an important bus route and will also take traffic past the new local centre where shops and small businesses will benefit. Carla Holmes has engaged urban designers of international repute, and I have every confidence their highways design is the correct one. So stick to your guns, Carla, and create a successfully integrated new part of our community, and you have my support. Jeremy Gardner, Andover Road North, Winchester.
This letter is from Mike Rowe and is headed, "Repeating a Brooks in Silverhill could be a costly mistake." Sir, many of us will welcome the question posed by Stephen Gates, Chairman of Winchester Chamber of Commerce, whether the Silverhill project was still appropriate, Chronicle March the 7th. Any scheme with a retail element born more than 10 years ago must inevitably be out of date and need reviewing. In the United States, major closures have occurred, and much has changed here already with the demise of many companies. We should therefore look at what a major British chain thinks of the future of retail. John Lewis, which seems not to have wanted a presence in Winchester except for a food store at Week, sees the internet as the future through click and collect, using existing convenience stores, newsagents, and petrol stations for collection. This reinforces my belief that repeating a Brooks in Silver Hill could be a serious mistake. The City Council's website makes it clear the situation is the plan as it stands or none at all. The latter may well be the better option, and perhaps we should hope the administrator puts Thornfield into liquidation, thus putting an end to the project. Meanwhile, we wish Mr. Gates a fruitful discussion among his members, leading to a useful conclusion to be put to the council. Mike Rowe, King's Close, Kingsworthy.
A letter with the title "Communists in All But Name" is from Jane Nicholson of Badger Farm. As the Liberal Democrats brag about their proposed mansion tax, we hear that a man in London would have to sell his home because he could no longer afford to live in it, should such a tax be made law. This is neither fair nor sensible. People should never be put in the position of being forced to sell up because of yet another tax on their house. I'm all for taxing the rich a bit more, but it should be on income. I also hear that the Liberal Democrats are thinking of taxing our possessions, which would mean dirty little government snoops pawing all over our property. This is despicable. People on modest means may not be exempt for long from either type of tax. Houses keep on going up in value, and I can well see that most of us may be forced to pay it in 10 to 15 years' time if it is not repealed. Furthermore, not only is it grossly unfair, it is counterproductive. The rich will just leave, and as they pay a larger proportion of our taxes, the rest will suffer. So will the artists and craftsmen who repair such houses and make the beautiful artefacts within them. They will be out of work, as no one will come forward to look after our heritage buildings or bother buying something with a continuing tax tag. Britain will be a less attractive place, as lovely old houses are left with no one to care for them. Most of our heritage is cared for and funded not by the government, but by private individuals and the National Trust. Do they want to destroy this? These liberals are communists in all but name. I'll never vote for them again. I'm not even on calling terms with someone who owns a mansion. But I do have artist and artisan friends. We will all have to pay more tax to get us out of this mess. And it is fair to charge the richer among us more. But it must be out of income. Jane Nicholson, Miss, May Tree Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And my next letter comes from Vera Bruti and is headed When All the Green Spaces Have Gone. Those living in Winchester can share and enjoy all the city has to offer, but I am convinced our local government is making a rod for its own back by allowing houses to be built just about anywhere, regardless of the lack of infrastructure, loss of green space and unsustainability. Soon, people will be living cheek by jowl on high-density estates, big and small. Quality of life will have declined, and there could be unrest through shortage of recreational facilities, car parks, and most important, open green spaces. We are not being NIMBYs when we say a huge scheme like Barton Farm will be unsustainable. The lack of infrastructure and building of large numbers of council houses on precious green space is deplorable. Councillor Tait may feel justified in recommending council houses be built at Abbots Barton, but does he not consider the consequences after they are occupied? The council has a vision of citizens walking or cycling into town from new developments, but has enough been set aside to construct new wide footpaths that will be necessary for all the people walking and cycling into town from Abbots Barton, Francis Gardens and Barton Farm? The present facilities are woefully inadequate. In good weather, it is a pleasure to walk or cycle into town through Abbots Barton, but it will change when people are vying for a bit of the footpath. This will have a knock-on effect when it comes the only large area of green space left, once Barton Farm and chunks of the green on Abbots Barton have gone. Vera Bruti, Manningford Close, Winchester.
And I have a letter from Ken Thornber, leader of the County Council. His letter is headed, Budget Maintains Services Despite Cuts. Sir, Hampshire County Council has set a £1.8 billion budget that freezes council tax, boosts the economy, and maintains all its services, despite cuts to grant of 43% over 4 years. For that, we owe enormous gratitude to our staff, contractors, partners, and volunteers in communities who have risen to the challenges. They played a part in dealing with the difficulties imposed by a huge reduction in income and increased costs and demand for services that they continue to provide and improve to enable Hampshire residents to receive the services they need the most. Services that are meeting the needs of the increase in frail and vulnerable elderly. We're improving the way those needs are looked after with our ambitious £45 million extra care housing programme to help them maintain independence and reduce the longer-term care bill. Services that safeguard many more vulnerable children than ever, rated excellent by Ofsted, to which we have added a budget to recruit 70 new social workers and support staff. Services that are repairing and strengthening roads damaged by weather, cutting carbon emissions and energy costs by £1.5 million. Replacing our street lights, spending £1 million to enhance concessionary bus fares, and sending the least amount of rubbish to landfill than anywhere else, using it to provide 10% of the electricity needed by homes in Hampshire. Services that are keeping all of Hampshire's libraries, museums, and children's centres running, with an increase in frontline family support workers, supporting schools who continue to improve their GCSE results above national average, and building 8,000 new classroom spaces. Our staff have changed the way they work to fill the gaps left by 1,800 colleagues who have not been replaced as part of the £46 million reduction in our pay bill, and changed where they work as we disposed of 73 buildings. We owe them our thanks and much more for the sacrifices they have made and efforts they have willingly contributed to protect the well-being of the people they serve across this great county, and I would like to thank them all. Ken Thornburgh, Leader of County Council, The Castle, Winchester.
And the next letter is from another elected member of Hampshire County Council, Keith Chapman, Executive Member for Culture and Recreation. He says, Hampshire libraries continue to thrive. Recent claims in the national press suggest 205 libraries across the country have been closed since the coalition came to power. While local authorities face financial pressures from reductions in government funding, Hampshire County Council has protected its library services for local communities, and we have not reduced the number of libraries in Hampshire. We are maintaining our book fund in 2013-14 at the current level and have worked with residents to meet their needs, which has even seen opening hours extended in some of our libraries. Despite having always received one of the lowest government grants of all county councils, Hampshire charges one of the lowest council taxes, has achieved £130 million recurring savings over 2.5 years, and continues to bring new and improved library services to the people of Hampshire. We embrace new technologies and offer a growing number of services on top of traditional book loans, e.g. DVD and CD hire, magazine loans, computer games, internet access and free Wi-Fi, online resources, audiobooks and rhyme time events. As a result, our libraries now enjoy over 6 million visits every year, with more than 7 million books, CDs, DVDs, magazines and games issued annually. Almost 2.5 million children's books were issued last year in our libraries, up 5% on the previous year. Hampshire residents treasure their libraries, and we are proud to be able to continue to deliver one of the largest and most popular library services in the whole of the UK. Keith Chapman, HCC Executive Member for Culture and Recreation, The Castle, Winchester.
A letter from Harvey Cole is headed, Local Plan Loophole Should Be Stopped. The examination in public of the Winchester local plan at least resolved one puzzle. The City Council has appeared unclear as to whether the proposed provision of 11,000 dwellings over 20 years included or excluded the 40% that policy also earmarked for affordable homes. It argued that the waiting list was too long to be eliminated without a much bigger target than 11,000. However, as a result of discussion of the examination and a weeding out of the numbers on the list, officers have decided that the existing backlog, plus future additions, could be accommodated over the 20 years of the plan by allocating 40% of all future building to the affordable sector. Thus, within the 12,500 dwellings, to which the inspector raised the total, there is now an acknowledged need for 5,000 affordable units at an average of 250 a year. This opens a loophole that needs to be stopped up before the plan is adopted. There is a risk that it will not be possible to provide all 5,000, partly because the new higher ceilings on rents will make them unaffordable to those in need. If this happens, there must be a mechanism to prevent any shortfall in the provision of affordable units simply being added to the numbers constructed for the open market. If that is allowed, it will add to the population being planned for and thus to the demand of a whole range of services exceeding what the plan takes into account. Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Winchester.
David Malone asks, why no law on cycle helmets? So we are proud grandparents of a mischievous and lively six-year-old. On a recent weekend, my wife decided that a cycle ride along the new path across Hockley Viaduct would be the order of the day. So far, so good. Then the subject of a cycle helmet came into play. We were quickly informed that none of our grandson's friends wore a helmet, so why should he? The answer from us was short and sweet. No helmet, no bike ride. A quick trip to Halfords and a few quid later, a fully fitted helmet was adorned and the fun began. Can anyone give me a sensible argument against cycle helmets being compulsory? If that were the case, there would be no arguments available to children or adults for that matter. Anyone not wearing a helmet could, at the very least, be fined on the spot. And even if one life a year was saved, it would surely vindicate the legislation. David Malone, Eastgate Street, Winchester.
And John Gallienne of Alsford has fond memories of the Queen's Head. Regarding the photo of Upper Brook Street in the snow in 1965, Chronicle, March the 7th, the GPO building shown is correct, as is the Sheriff and Ward Depository. But the building described as the Queen's Head is in fact Keith Brothers Wine Merchants. The sign that can just be made out always intrigued me, as it shows a man in a long black coat and wearing a black hat, sombrero. For a young boy this appeared quite spooky, but was in fact an advert for Sandyman, which I believe was a brand of port. The Queen's Head would have been opposite Keith's, but I believe it was knocked down in the late 1950s, and the brick wall suggests that the central car park was there in 1965. I was a regular visitor to the Queen's in the 50s, as my friend Jim was the son of the Mallets who ran the pub then. On its closure, they took over the new Queen's Head, Stanmore, until a few years later they moved to the Bold Forester in Sarasbury Green. Sadly, a few years later, Mr. Mallet died of heart failure in his 50s, and I lost touch with the family. Finally, does any reader know if Holy Trinity School was in Cossack Lane in 1871? John Gallienne, Perrins Close, Alsford.
Another letter asking for information about the past comes from Michael Stimpson, cricketing legend bought to book. I am planning to write a book on the life of legendary Hampshire cricketer George Brown, 1887 to 1964. He used to live in Winchester, and I would be interested in speaking to any of his family who still live in the area, or anyone else who might have known him. My email address is ljmw@btinternet.com. Michael Stimpson, Whittenham Lane, Dorchester-on-Thames, Oxfordshire.
This letter is another tracing one. It's from Peter Drake and says, can anyone help me trace my cousin? I'm trying to trace my cousin, Haywood James, who used to live at 3 Greenhill Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester, with his mother, Stella James, back in the 1950s. Stella was the widow of RSM Evan Haywood James, killed in Italy in 1943. The reason for wanting to make contact is that I have come across old letters sent by Haywood Sr. to his own mother, grandmother to Haywood and me, during those war years. Haywood would be in his 70s or even 80s now, so it could be his children who would want them. I have sent emails to quite a few organisations with little luck, and sometimes not even a reply, and this includes services associations. Peter Drake, West Street, Newport, Pembrokeshire. Telephone number 01239 820293.
Thank you very much. If you would like to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you could ring 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836, or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. You could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. On to historical items, and we start with 200 years ago, which is 1813. In the Commons on Thursday, Mr. Davis Giddy, after addressing the House on the hardship inflicted on authors and booksellers by the law which obliged them to furnish 11 copies of every work to the universities, moved that a select committee be appointed to consider the state of the laws affecting the right of copy, and whether any and what alteration ought to be made in the same. The motion was agreed to. Mr. Yeoman, the pedestrian, who undertook to go 360 miles in 6 days, completed his task at 11 o'clock on Saturday night, 6 miles from Basingstoke. He was reduced 2 stone by the undertaking, his legs much swollen, and he was altogether in a deplorable state. Nothing but determined resolution could have enabled him to win the match. He was not expected to proceed after Friday, and he was 16 hours doing the last 47 miles.
100 years ago, 1913, Mr. Arthur Lee, the member for South Hants, has emerged from a parliamentary task which has won him worldwide admiration. We refer to his piloting through the House of the Criminal Law Amendment Bill, popularly known as the White Slave Traffic Bill, a measure directed against an evil more widespread in this country than most had any idea of. It is feared that people were kept in ignorance of its existence from false ideas of propriety and modesty. And the second item. The council chamber was full on Thursday for a meeting held under the auspices of the Eastleigh branch of the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, a non-militant, non-party organisation. Mrs. Despard, president of the Women's Freedom League, was the principal attraction. In addition to those in the hall, there were as many more outside. Adopting the tactics of the suffragettes, some of the crowd threw stones, smashing windows at the office's entrance.
50 years ago, 1963, from Letters to the Editor, Sir, many people today talk so fast that their utterances sound like a jumble of incoherent sounds, mostly unintelligible except to other addicts of incoherent speech. They spurn the use of tongue and lips and seem to speak entirely with their tonsils. Surely some of the millions spent on education might go into teaching young people the English language, its grammar, vowel sounds, articulation, proper speed. It is a disgrace that it should be allowed to be sabotaged as it is today. And the second item, the appalling weather on East August Bank Holiday 1962 meant that the North East Hants Agricultural Association's annual show made a loss of £681. At the association's AGM at the Alton House Hotel on Friday, the secretary, Mr. W. A. Stratford, said this was reflected in the general account, which showed expenditure exceeded income by £749 for the year as a whole, against a profit of £187 in 1961.
25 years ago, 1988, the Countryside Commission's M3 proposals were dismissed as a fraud and a sham by the Department of Transport. The bitter attack came during its summing up at the public inquiry. Council David Altaras, in a five-hour closing address, said the Commission's scheme to upgrade the existing Winchester bypass was totally and utterly insensitive to its impact on people. It pretended to safeguard the countryside when really it introduced a motorway into the heart of an area favoured by Winchester residents for recreation, he said. Item number two. Winchester Health Authority has launched a campaign to help intravenous drug users combat the AIDS virus. The scheme, run by the Community Drugs Advisory Service, is aimed at preventing the disease spreading through use of shared needles. It offers advice, counselling and education, and a confidential telephone helpline to be called the Median AIDS Line is to be established.
Your say is next from Claire, please.
We asked, what do you think of the 8-month sentences handed down to former Eastleigh MP Chris Hoon and his ex-wife Vicky Price? Brian Jones, who's 68 and a retired soldier of Worthy Lane, Hyde, said, I think people will be a bit miffed, because if it was us, we would get heavier sentences, and we would probably get released a lot later than Hoon and his wife. I'm sure they won't serve 8 months, but the average person on the street probably would. Carl Payne, who's 22, a student of Romsey Road, Winchester, said, the sentences are fair for both of them. Just because he's a politician does not mean he should get off lightly. He was perverting the course of justice. He admitted it in the end, but he probably only did it because his lawyers advised him to. She didn't, so I think the sentences are fair. Bianca Cassidy, 21, promotions assistant of King's Avenue, Stanmore, said, I'm not sure how fair it is because I don't know what the normal punishments are. It's likely he got a lighter sentence because he's a politician. I do not think that's right, though. They should get the same sort of punishment as everyone else. Joe Rutterford, who's 21, a student of Sparkford Close, Winchester, said, I think it was about right. Even though it's been blown up by the media, if normal people did it, they would get a similar sentence. It's not the crime of the century, but they lied to the court. If he's an MP, he's meant to be creating the laws, so it's serious.
Chronicle comment concerns the Hampshire County Council expenditure on HMS M33, which will be a news item later on. Should it really be the responsibility of a local authority to preserve an historic warship? A very worthy cause it might be, but in these austere times, when the County Council has axed 1,700 jobs and slashed local services, questions are rightly being asked. The Chronicle has discovered that in the past year alone, £250,000 of taxpayers' money has been spent on restoring the first World War gunship, HMS M33, currently in dry dock in Portsmouth. The council refused to divulge how much it has spent on the gunboat since it was purchased in 1990. One of only two British World War I ships of its kind surviving, the County Museum Service placed her in dry dock in 1997 for extensive works to stabilise hull corrosion. Other repairs have included new masts, internal structural works and making her hull watertight. The latest refit is a joint project with the National Museum of the Royal Navy to mark the 100th anniversary of the Gallipoli campaign in 2015. Whilst applauding attempts to preserve this country's proud naval heritage, we can't help but think that most residents in Hampshire would rather their money was spent on items that benefit their everyday lives instead. Now we have First Person, which is read today by Robin.
First Person this week is by Rosemary McMullen, who claims life as an open Facebook. I believed Facebook was for the young, or for those with nothing better to do with their computer time. I have, however, been drawn into the world of a wider family circle online, and am now eating my words. As I write, a cousin is flying to Christchurch, New Zealand, to stay with the same relative who took me round South Island years ago when the cathedral was still standing. This host, now in his 90s, has taken to Facebook in a big way, and through his photos and diary, I will have the chance of feeling part of it all. I thought I was really with it when I began texting. At first, this was simply a useful tool for the train arriving at 3, or meet you at the bus shelter type of thing. Now I text my sister to arrange a time for a catch-up chat on the phone. So much better not to worry about her being out or too busy to talk. There's nothing more frustrating than calling someone with an urgent need to unburden oneself, only to get that brr, brr, brr busy line. It is also useful to give a hint of what the call is about. Our chats tend to fall into three categories. Get a cup of tea, put your feet up, get the tissues, and prepare to be sympathetic. Just a quick one, so carry on with what you are doing and listen with half an ear. Guess what's happening? Prepare to be admiring and not a little envious. It's often useful, too, to text a little postscript when you realise that there was something else you wanted to say. Then there's Skype, which I've so far resisted. My daughter in New Zealand works all day on a computer, and the time difference makes it difficult. Would I really want to get out of bed in the wee small hours and face her with the sight of my ageing wrinkled face in my ageing wrinkled dressing gown? And honesty is not always the best policy on the phone. The little white lie can't be hidden face to face. How are you, Mum? Fine, darling, I say brightly, leaving the tissues to sniffle into when the call is finished. Or through gritted teeth, no, of course I understand why you can't find time to ring. I don't mind at all. Her eldest is at Wellington University, and once in a while I glance guiltily at his student antics through his Facebook page and add a comment. It does feel as if we are all in a kind of virtual Big Brother house. My sister has a time slot to watch her 18-month-old grandson in New York disporting himself at nursery school. Each morning she spends 20 minutes watching from Scotland as, all unknowing, he toddles around. It's reported on a German version or it is reported that a German version of One Born Every Minute is being banned on the grounds that it violates the rights of babies. Wee William's life may be an open book from cradle to grave, and I think on balance I'm glad to have been brought up with an expectation of privacy.
Now, Belgarum's diary, please, Jerry.
Painting the town green. Winchester residents can start their St Patrick's Day celebrations early on March the 14th. O'Neill's Winchester is inviting punters to help it break the world record for most people dancing an Irish jig at the same time. All 49 pubs across the country are taking part, with the dance starting at 8 p.m, aiming to beat the current record of 10,036 people. Ursula Haller, O'Neill's manager, said, "We really want the people of Winchester to join us to help smash the world record and have great fun at the same time. Every year, we look at ways to celebrate our favourite event, St Patrick's Day, while also trying to give something back to the local community. The event is also raising money for the Wessex Cancer Research and Sutton Scotney Hospice Naomi House. For more details or to view a live stream, visit o'neills.co.uk/St Patrick's Day, all one word.
Thank you. Finally, in this section, we have Westminster Diary, written this week by George Hollingbury, MP for the Bean Valley. So, what do you think about immigration? Are you a slam-close-the-doors sort, or do you prefer welcome-with-open-arms version? How about health? Is it privatise and be damned, or protect from the market at all cost? What about the economy, Plan A or Plan B? My bet is that most people reading this column are unlikely to be persuaded by any of these positions. I'm certainly not. So why is it then that we hear so many politicians narrowing complex arguments down to such simple soundbites? The first explanation is plain to most of us. Getting complicated arguments across takes time and effort on both sides, and simple messages are much more likely to penetrate than complicated ones. All of us see enough advertisements around us every day to be more than familiar with the power of this tactic. Second, the more you elaborate in politics, the more you open yourself up to attack. How? Complicated arguments contain subtleties that can be presented as gaffes, admissions, or clearly against party policy when taken out of context. These attacks take two forms, the political opponent and the journalists. Now, I blame neither for their opportunism. The former needs to find weakness to illustrate the strength of their own argument. The latter needs to file words the next day that will be of some interest to a reader. The result, though, is that there is an ever-increasing inclination to simplify the argument, shorten the response, and stick to the lines. How do I know this is true? Because after being closely involved in the Eastleigh by-election, which took place under the most intense media and opposition spotlight that could be imagined, I found myself doing exactly that. Finally, politics has become more ideological, at least on my side of the aisle. A week or so ago, a colleague made what seemed to be an odd comment. He announced to all who were listening that he didn't have any idea what I believed in. I sat and thought about this, and indeed I worried about it for some time. Why? Because there is some truth in what he said. It took me a few days to understand that his certainty was simply a reflection of his ideological views. For that person, there are absolutes, inviolates, and principles that cannot be traduced. I am unembarrassed to say that I find it difficult to share such ironclad views other than at the most general level. The point here, though, is that this once again leads to the taking of simplistic positions on both left and right. Taxes should go up or down. Public spending is good or bad. Plain cigarette packaging is a necessary step for healthcare, or gross infringement of our freedoms. The great irony is that we live in a world where there is more and more information available to us on every issue under the sun, and yet, at the same time, public discourse is increasingly conducted in a less nuanced and less subtle fashion. Something of a paradox, I think you'll agree. Well, those were the regular features chosen for you this week. Claire, perhaps you could start us off with items of general news, please.
This one is police boss up for the challenge. Hampshire's new police commissioner says he has hit the ground running as he marked his first 100 days in the post. Simon Hayes says he has already made difficult decisions that could have major ramifications for the taxpayer and the police. The new commissioner role was the most controversial change to how policing in Hampshire is governed in decades. The scrapping of the police authority and the creation of an £80,000 a year police and crime commissioner, PCC, caused much debate. But there was such uninterest that less than 20% of people bothered to turn out at the county's polling stations. But independent Mr. Hayes defended a decision to spend thousands of pounds of public money hiring a deputy, revealed he is considering going against the government and increasing police officers' starting pay. Mr. Hayes has been busy recruiting a new chief constable, drafting a long-term police and crime plan, attending countless meetings, and been trying to ingratiate himself with police officers and the public. He shrugs off the suggestion that he is still unknown to the residents of Hampshire. He said he is making strenuous efforts to get into communities and meet the people he now serves, and make them understand that he has a mission to protect people and places, reduce crime and reduce victims. He said, "I have always recognised that the vast majority didn't understand what a PCC was about. So I am keen to explain to people as I meet them what I am doing and what I can bring to the table. People can recognise the priorities that I'm talking about, particularly the criminality that comes as a result of drug and alcohol issues, like thefts to feed a habit." But he says the past 4 months, during which he has attended more than 200 meetings, met over 2,000 people, and travelled in excess of 2,000 miles, has taught him that he can't do it on his own. In coming months, he will be drafting a job description with a salary that he hopes will attract someone who can deputise at top-level meetings. Meanwhile, the Windsor report to the government has recommended starting salaries for new officers be slashed to £19,000, which, Mr. Hayes says, poses a big dilemma as they look to fill 112 new posts. He said, to put it mildly, it is unfortunate what the government is proposing and what Tom Windsor's report is recommending. The constabulary draws a lot of people from the pool of PCSOs who work for them, who could be currently earning £4,000 or £5,000 more than that. I have the right to increase that starting salary, and I'm seriously looking at doing that because I believe it's the right thing to do. The other pressing task for Mr. Hayes, at a time of extraordinary savings of £50 million being met by the force, was the costly building stock, not to mention the £9.2 million purchase of Alpha Park in Chandler's Ford, which was destined for a new police headquarters, but for years has sat empty and unused. He has drafted in an independent advisor to carry out a comprehensive estates review.
More time to look at school plans. Proposals for a Winchester super school have been put on hold to give residents more time to examine the plans, according to the County Council. an application to build a 420-place primary school at the Westgate in Cheriton Road, full flood, was set to go before a regulatory committee yesterday, Wednesday, but it was deferred last week. Several residents in Cheriton Road and Lynx Road have opposed the plans because they say it increases traffic problems in the area. A spokesman for the County Council said the decision was made to allow people more time to consider recent amendments made to the plans. The spokesman said, due to the number of responses to the planning application and the Council's amendments to the plan as a result of those, the Council has decided to move the consideration of this application to the next regulatory committee. While all the amendments have been published online and in accordance with due process, the Council recognises that the local community have had only a short period to consider them all in their totality. This deferral, therefore, seems the best way to ensure the local community has time to consider the application with all amendments before it is taken to regulatory committee for decision. Amendments include parking for 40 cars in Chilbolton Avenue to reduce traffic in Cheriton Road and a drop-off and pick-up zone in Cheriton Road.
Care home Hitler, failed dying OAP, hearing told. A Winchester care home boss, described as a bit of a Hitler, refused to call an ambulance for a dementia patient who was choking to death, a disciplinary hearing heard. Anne Taylor is alleged to have made no attempt to resuscitate the woman, and cruelly quipped, "She'll be dead before they get here anyway." She put her foot down despite the fact that the nearest hospital was just a 5-minute drive away, the Nursing and Midwifery Council heard. Taylor is accused of failing to act when the woman, described as Resident A, experienced breathing difficulties during breakfast at St Cross Grange care home on June the 19th, 2009. Care assistant Veronica Westcott said she felt she could not object to Taylor's decision because of the manager's fearsome reputation. She told the panel she was convinced the patient would still be alive today had Taylor called the 999 immediately. Miss Westcott said, "Mrs. Taylor did not call an ambulance or let anyone else in that room call an ambulance. She was adamant we did not need one, and I thought that was wrong. She's the care home nurse and I'm just a carer. She wanted things done in her way and her way only. She was looked upon as a bit of a Hitler by everyone in the home because she wanted everything to be her own way." She also claimed she heard Taylor tell a colleague, "I think I'm in trouble now," after Resident A was pronounced dead. Taylor is not attending the hearing in London and has not formally admitted or denied any of the allegations. If found guilty of misconduct, she could be banned from the profession. The hearing continues.
Cut price heating offer. Residents of a Winchester estate are being offered cut price heating as part of a new government scheme. People in Winnell can get a replacement boiler free or at reduced price under the Warm Up Winnell scheme. Janet Berry of Winnell Community Centre said, "It's a great scheme, using government funding to save energy, save money and help people stay warm. Some people will get their new boiler paid for under the government ECO scheme. Others will pay a reduced price. If they are not in a position to pay the cost up front, they could choose a Green Deal loan, with payments coming from the savings on their gas and electricity bills. The project is targeted at people who own their own homes. Many people used the right to buy their home from the City Council years ago. Now they are pensioners and their boilers are worn out and inefficient. This is a way we can help them cover the cost," said Brian Collin, Hampshire County Council for Winnell. Anyone who wants to register their interest or would like to find out what help they can get should ring 0800 952 0037 and quote Warm Up Winnell, or ask at the community centre in Garbett Road. The works will be organised by Yes Projects, which ran the recent successful Insulate Hampshire scheme. The project is funded by Winchester City Council using a grant from the Department of Energy and Climate Change and coordinated by Winchester Action on Climate Change, that's WINAC. It is part of a coordinated programme of activities, including a free energy help centre in the Brooks Centre. People can apply for a free Green Deal assessment by emailing shop@winac.org.uk. Texting Green Deal to 07731 960320 or visiting the Energy Help Centre at the Brooks Centre.
Small school has big heart. 14 students from St Mary's College, Southampton, we'll be travelling to Madagascar this Easter to work on a school's building project with a community in Andranasoa, east of the capital Tana. In recent years, students from the small independent school have travelled to Senegal and Togo to undertake valuable charity work in similar schemes. Said head teacher Craig Lickley, "It's what we do. The college was founded by a missionary order, and so it's quite natural that we continue to support other communities in need around the globe. These can become life-changing experiences for those involved, and our students develop a real understanding and passion for those whose lives can be a daily struggle. I like to think that we are a small school with a big heart." Charitable work at St Mary's College is mainly directed at raising funds for CAFOD, the official Catholic Aid Agency for England and Wales, and for schools identified through the broader work of the Brothers of Christian Instruction. Over £15,000 was raised recently for rebuilding of schools in Haiti following the devastating earthquake that struck the country in 2010.
Tributes to a brave and special boy. White doves were released at the funeral to commemorate the life of a strong, brave and special boy who lost his life to a rare genetic illness. Harley Blanchard Rafter was just one of a handful of children in the world to suffer from the debilitating, rare genetic condition. But the seven-year-old's fighting spirit saw him defy all expectations to live his fragile life to the fullest, said his mother, Lucy. The special service was held at Southampton Crematorium on Monday to mark the life of the Chandlersford youngster who fought and fought. Doctors used to make a joke about Harley that whatever they said, he would do the opposite, said Lucy. When he developed pneumonia, Lucy said she was braced for the worst, but did not want Harley to die in hospital surrounded by tubes and machines. And in true Harley style, he defied the odds and hung on long enough to make it to Naomi House Children's Hospice, where he had been since the age of 18 months. Lucy, who's been staying at the facility at Sutton Scotney since he passed away, said it was right to bring him here. He waited until all his family were around him. It was very peaceful, and we were very privileged to have that experience. I think he did that for me, because I would not have coped another way. In his last hours, Harley was spared the seizures that could strike as much as five times a day, and he managed one more hand and foot painting amid his beloved lights and music. Harley's grandmother, Teresa Blanchard, who moved from Spain to help care for Harley, added, "He was a very strong, brave and special boy." Lucy added, "For a little boy who never took a step, he touched a lot of people's lives." People attending his funeral wore blue, the favourite colour of a boy who was at his happiest bathing in water. Thanks to Harley's spirit, people gave up time and effort to fundraise for him. This saw his dad, Joe Rafter, scaling the summit of Africa's tallest mountain, Mount Kilimanjaro. It allowed Harley to travel to Disneyland and Paris 3 times, and Florida, where he swam with dolphins. This was no mean feat, because it required care support, oxygen, and a specially adapted chair and transport. Lucy said she could not dare to think how she could have coped without the help of the charity-funded facility Naomi House. Now Lucy is no longer with Harley's father, Joe, and is looking ahead to a new life after losing her only child. She is studying for a BA in photography in London. She said, "I will never achieve anything better than Harley, but I hope I will do something to make him proud."
Borough to charge £25 for bins. Test Valley Borough Council is to start charging for domestic wheeled bins from April the 1st, bringing in extra cash and forcing people to take better care of the bins, councillors hope. The charge is expected to be £25 for both the 240-litre and 140-litre domestic wheeled bins. The £30,000 provided by the charge will help fund the £56,000 annual cost of providing the bins. The cost of providing bins is expected to increase partly because the number of households is rising so rapidly. Currently, Test Valley has 49,500 households, but the major developments taking place mean this will increase to 53,500 and each will need bins. The council supplies 2,800 new bins to households each year. Most councils in Hampshire already charge for wheelie bins, but while one, New Forest, continues to have sacks for domestic refuse. In his report to the Borough Council's Cabinet, Environment Portfolio Holder Councillor Peter Bolton said the new delivery charge may reduce demand for the supply of bins and could therefore reduce the anticipated increased income level.
Forest deer will avoid culls. Extra culls have been ruled out in the New Forest, despite a huge rise in the national deer population. A report says Britain has more wild deer than at any time since the last ice age, and says half the population should be shot each year to protect the countryside. But the Forestry Commission says that target is already being achieved in the forest, which is thought to contain at least 2,000 deer. The Commission's most senior officer in the area, Deputy Surveyor Mike Seddon, said culls and road accidents killed about 1,000 deer each year. But he agreed that Britain's deer population was too high, and called for a more coordinated approach to tackle the problem. Mr. Seddon said the Commission employed professional keepers and wildlife rangers to manage deer in areas such as the New Forest.
Unmasking a murderer, a science in itself. Children in Alsford got to solve a murder in a fun activity day. The blood was spattered at the scene of the dastardly deed. There were murder weapons to analyse and fingerprints to take. The 24 Year 6 children taking part in the crime scene investigation morning were from 5 local primary schools, Sunhill Junior, Cheriton, Preston Candover, Ropley and Fourmarks. The Mayor of Winchester, Frank Pearson, dropped by to help out, along with Year 10 students from Perrins School in Alsford. The aim of the day was to think about and be interested in science and technology. Paul Waterworth, director of MCS Projects and an Oxford resident, said, "It was brilliant. This was the first time we'd done this with Year Sixes and mixed schools. Everyone thoroughly enjoyed it. And you can see that they jolly well did from the photographs. They're having a wonderful time."
Two more school stories. Students from Sparsholt College are taking part in a landscaping project at Stanmore Primary School. The students are clearing the school frontage to improve the grounds and will be assessed as they carry out the work. Unusually for a primary school, Stanmore has extensive, mature, spacious grounds with large trees, a pond, outdoor classroom and planting beds. Plans are afoot to improve the recreational and educational space. The reception play area has already had a major spring clean. New surfaces and fences have been installed, and the children are looking forward to the arrival of a new playhouse. Parents are being recruited to join a ground force team over the weekend of March 16th to 17th, and students will spend March 18th to 19th improving the frontage. Said acting head Darren Nickerson, "We are all very excited to be working with Sparsholt on this project and delighted they will be able to use it as part of their course assessment. It'll be fabulous to see our grounds looking their best when spring finally arrives." And the second school story is headed "In the Market for Learning Experience." Stockbridge County Market was host to some very special guests last Thursday when the Spratt and Winkle class from Stockbridge Primary School paid a visit. As part of a project on food and where it comes from, their teacher, Polly Hutchinson, thought the local country market a great place to start, especially as the children hope to be growing their own vegetables in the future. Market chairman Michaela Nadal said, "We were delighted to welcome the children to the market, and with locally sourced eggs, vegetables, honey, jams, and all sorts of cooked foods, they could actually speak to the producers who supply the market. Even our local beekeeper was on hand to answer questions. Knowing where our food comes from and cutting carbon footprints is on everyone's mind these days, and local country markets help people to do this."
Plan to convert ex-civic offices refused. Plans to convert former part Georgian civic offices into flats in Winchester city centre have been rejected by city council planners. Ameriscot Commercial applied to change the use of Trafalgar House on Trafalgar Street, next to the law courts, and convert it into 15 flats for people aged 55 and over. The mid-18th century Georgian building is part Grade 2 listed, and the modern extension was built in the 1970s.
Still looking for new hospital site. Health chiefs are still searching for a suitable site to build a new hospital. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust announced last year it wants to build a £70 million hospital with a state-of-the-art cancer centre between Winchester and Basingstoke. But Deputy Chief Executive and Chief Nurse Donna Green said, "It's still a work in progress. We are aware that it's something everyone wants to know, but it's still some way off yet."
Well, thank you, everyone. That concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. A reminder again that Lynn Parker is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 862826. Many thanks to our editors, Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding. Thanks also to the copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Goodbye.
Jerry.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me, Peter. Would you please put your memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you again and goodbye.